I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 143 of We Are Going Up. I'm Mark Crossley, David Cameron Walker. Hello.
Hello.
How are you, mate? You well?
Very well, yes.
So that pre-season optimism, everybody, that me and DC always have, sort of late July, early August. Check this out. Between our two teams, Bury and Watford, the record in the last eight games reads as follows. Played 8, 1-0. Drawn 0, lost 8. Goals 4, goals against 14. Happy Christmas, everyone. The wheels are officially off. What on earth is going on?
Well, we played quite well at the weekend, from what I hear, actually, against Cardiff. And just, unfortunately, one of those games where we couldn't score. I was at the game against Derby the week previous, though, and didn't play that well for all the game. We were little spells where you show what we can do when we're on it. But ultimately, Derby were just about the better side. And two fantastic finishes from Jordan Iben, from Craig Bryson, to give them what was probably just about a deserved victory. But it's so tight at the moment. I suppose the evidence of maybe the lack of quality, or how competitive, or whatever you want, whichever way you want to put it, of this division this season, is that we've lost 4 in a row and we're only down in 7th, still, you know, only a couple of points off the top.
What's the opposite of a manager of the month? Because that is the award that would be given out to Messrs Flitcroft and Jukanovic for the last few weeks.
What's going on with you then?
Oh, I don't know. We'll get onto it later. Let's save it for later in the show. The best month for the football season has arrived, December, when the games come flying thick and fast. And if you're not feeling festive already, what I've got here, I've got that. Now, I didn't know that was still a thing. My phone ran out of battery last night. I had a very long bus journey, so I bought that. Do you want to explain what that is?
You bought it?
I did buy it.
What time?
Quite late.
Where did you get it from?
The Match of the Day Christmas magazine issue.
I was with you last night. This was like 2 in the morning.
Yeah, I didn't know this was still on.
Where'd you get it from? A news agency?
Yeah, it's like a co-op, yeah.
Tremendous.
So it features footballers' Christmas carols, Sergio Aguero mocked up as Santa, Brendan Rodgers mocked up as a donkey, and your favourite, and I text you this or WhatsApp you, where is it? Paz and Bez's incredibly hearty, sprouty and farty Christmas party, which, to quote you, is the worst sentence ever spelt in the history of human communication. Do you still stand by that today?
I do. Yeah.
Absolutely awful. And there's also a load of tat here, including the worst football whistle in the world, which I don't know where I've dropped it somewhere. It's down here. Have a listen to this. That's all I've got.
Oh, Jesus.
So, there's one to get for the kids this Christmas. A couple of bits to get through. It's the FSF Awards tonight. It's 1 year since we met Luis Suarez. He tried to persuade him to sign for Watford. We were cruelly overlooked this year. That's a bit of a shame.
But good luck, though, to many friends who are there
indeed
tonight, friends of the show.
If you do want to help us out, though, you can make us feel better by going to audible.co.uk. So I've done it. audible.co.uk/goingup. Sign up for a completely free audiobook on us, or you can go to wearegoingup.co.uk/Paddy Power. Because if you go there and sign up, you get a £20 free bet if you set up an account and bet a fiver. Perfect for a flutter on the football. And while we're talking about free stuff, DC, what do we have to give away on the show this week?
We have 3 copies of the new Football Manager game, Football Manager 2015, which is just recently come out.
Excellent.
I can vouch for its quality, as ever, a fantastic game, and we're going to give 3 copies away.
We are, so keep listening for that. We'll set you a question later. We should say, by the way, apologies for the sort of lack of shows. We are working on a special project at the minute for Christmas, so we are doing stuff, but you're just not hearing it yet. That will all become evident in a few weeks' time. On this show today, we need to talk a little bit about Malky Mackay and Dave Whelan getting himself into all kinds of bother. Paul Cox has left Mansfield. We'll touch on that. We've got a busy one in terms of guests as well. Mark Halliwell, author of the blog Cheltenham Town Chatter and Cocon for BBC Radio Gloucester. She'll be on later. The Robins drew 1-1 with Oxford on the weekend. They are 17th in League 2. They've got themselves a new manager in the shape of Paul Buckle, who has swapped New York for Cheltenham in the process. More on that later. We'll get Mark's opinion on his appointment and the sacking of Mark Yates. We'll also be joined on the phone later by solicitor and sports lawyer Daniel G, who edits the football law publication On The Ball, because it's all going on at Leeds, isn't it? Massimo Cellino has been disqualified by the Football League in the latest twist, and he's been asked to resign because new documents obtained from an Italian court show he's been found to breach its fit and proper ownership test. So more on that with Dan in a bit, but we are going to start on the pitch, thankfully. One of the Football League's most surprising success stories, I'd say, this season. Ipswich Town, the Tractor Boys, remember playing their 13th consecutive season in the Championship, and they're currently second in the table after an unbeaten November, which culminated in that last gasp 1-0 win at Charlton on Saturday lunchtime, thanks to a goal by new loan signing Noel Hunt right at the death. So with a squad that cost just 10 grand to assemble, how on earth is Mick McCarthy pulling this off? Let's find out by speaking to Stuart Watson, who is the Ipswich reporter for the East Anglian Daily Times and Evening Star. And Stuart is on the line and he joins us right now. Stuart, thank you very much for coming on the show. The last time we had you on was back in October 2012, when Paul Jewell was sacked and Ipswich were bottom of the Championship with just one win from 12 league games. 2 years later, and it's been quite a turnaround.
Yeah, it feels like a long time ago now. I can't remember exactly the conversation we had last time, but it would have been very different to the one we're having now. It's easy to forget how bad things were towards the end of the Paul Jewell era. Just mentioned there, rock bottom of the table, off the pitch, things were a little bit messy. And 2 years on, it's all changed, and I think Mick McCarthy has to take full credit for all of that.
It has been gradual process, really. It hasn't been, obviously, 2 years, as you say, since McCarthy took over, and it wasn't like he came in and immediately overnight everything was solved, and he hasn't had a lot of money to work with. You know, hardly any money's been spent on this team, but gradually he's got that team that he wants. And, you know, this season, in a division that is really, really tight, you know, it could be a team, you know, an unexpected team that could take advantage of that this season and could end up being even in the top two, let alone the playoffs.
Absolutely, yeah. And it's, you know, you said there about it being a slow build. I've called it a few times in the newspaper, sort of a bit of a quiet revolution, really. I think it has just been, you know, constant forward steps in the right direction. There was a lot of behind the scenes stuff, and, you know, Mick McCarthy soon worked out the players he wanted to move on, and he's slowly moulded things to his way of doing it. And as you say, I think this year, looking at how it's panning out, no team's really taken the division by the scruff of the neck in the way Leicester did last year, and you start to think that somebody could, you know, like Ipswich, could sneak into those top two.
Is it too early to call that? You know, is this going to be a proper promotion push, or, I mean, how do you see it playing out?
I have to say, at the start of the season, I thought Ipswich might be dark horses for the top six at best, and they had a bit of a slow start, and you began to worry if they would be sort of just on the cusp of things. But the last few weeks, the way they've beaten teams like Watford and Wolves at home, they've gone and drawn at a very good Bournemouth side, one last gasp at Charlton at the weekend. You have to start taking top two seriously, I think, as the weeks go by, because there's a said before, I don't see two standout teams that are going to run away with it. And so, yeah, why not dream of top two? That's the way the players are talking about it at the moment. So, yeah, it's looking, it could be a possibility.
As we said, Mick McCarthy's hardly spent a penny, certainly in transfer fees, on this team, getting a lot of free transfers in, a few loans here and there. I think the owner, Marcus Evans, probably had his hands burnt after some of the extravagant spending of previous managers, and obviously the club needs to be well run and, you know, balance the books and all that. So the spending's been reined in, but now is it a time to maybe open the purse strings a little bit in January and, you know, given the position that the team find themselves in, you know, bring in a little bit of an extra quality to give them that boost? Or does the team not need that? Is it better to keep going with what they've got?
Yeah, it's the million-dollar question, I think, among supporters at the moment. They think that as well as Mick's done to get them into position, into this position on such a limited budget. I think at the moment, Tyrone Mings is the only player in the starting 11 that cost anything, and he was 10 grand from a non-league club, and they're now talking about 10 million to Premier League clubs for him. So that shows you the sort of hidden gem that they've managed to uncover.
He's been linked with Arsenal, hasn't he, this week, Tyrone Mings?
Yeah, he's been linked with Arsenal. I know that Pat Rice from Arsenal is watching him every game at the moment. Joe Royal's a big admirer, ex-Ipswich manager up at Everton now. Chelsea, his dad, AD, works for Chelsea, so as a scout, so they'll know all about him. It's just an incredible success story with Tyrone Mings. Sorry, I know we're going down a different route to what we were discussing, but I mean, he has sort of epitomised what McCarthy's done in the transfer market. So, yeah, now they find themselves in a position that heading into January, if they're in this sort of position, do they go out and really give themselves a good chance in the second half of the season? Of course, the balancing act is this team's been built very heavily on team spirit and hard graft and players working for each other, and sometimes if you go out and sign someone for decent money, decent wages, are they going to fit into what McCarthy's forged so far? So that will be the balancing act come January, I think.
Looking at the goals and the ability of the team to score goals, you've got Daryl Murphy and David McGoldrick up front. Players that McGoldrick had a good season last season, but they've never been prolific throughout their careers, really. Murphy especially, but he's got he's into double figures already this season, so they're coming good now. But can they be relied upon, do you think, to get you up and really make you a challenger? Or do you think perhaps, obviously, I know you brought in Noel Hunt recently, but again, he's a player not the greatest record in front of goal in terms of the stats. Is there maybe more firepower that could be needed in January?
I think they would maybe look at that area of the team, but certainly not for the lack of ability or quality from McGoldrick and Murphy. I think probably in terms of a front two, they're as good as there is in this division, but I think they might need a bit of extra depth in that position, that's for sure, because if one of those two that we've just been mentioning were to get injured, they're a little bit light on the ground in that front. Noel Hunt's come in, I think they'll probably use him more as a utility man out wide or just behind the strikers. But beyond those two, you've got Connor Salmon, who's on loan from Derby. I think he's probably more of an impact sub, someone who can work hard and see a game out. And Balint Biner, who's a Hungarian striker they signed in the summer from Dortmund, and he's not quite had the impact they hoped. So maybe they would look to bring someone in as a striker in January. But no, it's interesting. You were just talking about McGoldrick and Murphy's previous reputations. I think McCarthy has got players in that fans of former clubs have said, well, why are you signing him? Christoph Berra, Wolves fans, were saying similar things about him, and Luke Chambers wasn't a fan's favourite at Forest, and likewise McGoldrick. So McCarthy seems to have this record of getting players that maybe, you know, the outside footballing world look at as very average players, and he somehow takes them up a level. So,
well, surely not bringing in Noel Hunt kind of, you know, is a perfect example of that, because I've got the stats here for Leeds. He played 1,161 minutes, no goals. Ipswich, 7 minutes, one goal. He hadn't scored for 2 years. There was a bit of sort of back and forth with him in the press up there, and then he comes to Ipswich straight away, last minute winner.
It's incredible. It just there's something about the atmosphere that they create up there, and they're definitely, the whole is worth more than some of their parts, that's for sure. He turns very average players and manages to turn them into a team. And I think the players would admit themselves that they're not the most talented in the division, but somehow the way they sort of click together, it's creating something special. And already we're getting comparisons with the way Burnley went up in second last year. You know, they had a very good front too, and then a team of a fairly unfancied team, but in the Championship, hard graft and team spirit takes you quite a long way, I think.
At times in the past, certain sections of the footballing world, fans and press alike, have always been fans of Mick McCarthy's football. A very effective manager. He's got teams out of the Championship on more than one occasion, but not always really managed to excel in the Premier League. Obviously the success of the team will speak volumes at the moment, but how have the fans taken to him in terms of his style as a manager?
I think probably in the summer, that was the big question mark. I think everyone assessed what he'd done in the way that he came in, steadied the ship, kept them up in the first season last year, took them to the next level, finished ninth. But the one big question mark was the style of play. And it was very physical, very functional, direct at times. Wasn't always great to watch, I have to say, as someone who went to every game home and away. And the fear was, if you know, if they were to continue to bob around in mid-table playing that style of football, it wasn't going to attract the fans back to Portman Road. I have to say, this season, I think they have evolved as a team in terms of playing style. They had Johnny Williams back on loan from Crystal Palace, who's a, you know, very skillful, talented player. Teddy Bishop has come through from the academy. He's in that same sort of mould. Tyrone Mings, who we've touched upon, is a, you know, an exciting left-back who bombs forward. So they have got more to their play, and opposition managers still come out and talk about how, you know, they were kicked off the park and physical long ball football. But I have to say, I think they're a bit more than that this year.
I'm just looking, you mentioned they finished ninth last season. I'm just looking back at Ipswich's previous finishes in the Championship. So if we start sort of with last season first, 9th, 14th, 15th, 13th, 15th, 9th, 8th, 14th, 15th. So I think it's fair to say the fans need something to get excited about.
Yeah.
Because it's been a long old run in the same division, pretty much in mid-table all the way.
It has, yeah. I mean, at least with some teams that have gone down to League One and then come back up. We saw it with Southampton and Norwich going down, and that was the best thing that happened to them, because they then end up getting double promotions. And there has been that debate at times amongst Ipswich fans. You know, would even going down to come back stronger have been a good option, because the alternative was just bobbing around in mid-table in the Championship year after year, and it was a bit of a Groundhog Day scenario, to be honest. So, yeah, as you say, they've been waiting a while to have something to cheer about. It's his 13th successive season in the Championship, longest serving team in the second tier, so it's just nice to have something to for the fans to get excited about, that's for sure.
And quite a few games coming up, obviously, over the next few weeks with Christmas and New Year, and I'm just looking at the fixtures. Leeds, who obviously had a good win at the weekend. Bolton are in good form, Middlesbrough in good form, Brentford are in great form. Doesn't get any easier, really.
No, it's the old cliche, isn't it? And Nick McCarthy will sort of back that one up. He's as pragmatic as they come. So you offer him any point away from home, no matter whether you're playing top or bottom of the division, he'll tell you he'll take it without even having to get on the coach if you offered it to him. But they've got that good formula at the moment. They're winning most of their home games, picking up good points on their travels, and that tends to be a formula for success, doesn't it? So, yeah, they're all big games coming up. I think the challenge now will change. I think they've flown a little bit under the radar. Weren't many people's picks, but now they're up in second. I think you get a bit more of a target on your back, and you're a scout for other teams. So that's the big test now.
And Stuart, just one final question on Mick McCarthy. What's he like as a journalist to work with? I imagine, is he, you know, is he one of these guys that just tells it how it is all the time?
Absolutely, yeah. Everyone always asks what's he like, and exactly what you see on the television, to be honest. Very honest, very pragmatic. As a journalist, he's not necessarily one that you'll be able to ring up or text during the week and get a few little off-the-record steers, but likewise, he's not going to lead you down any garden paths in his press conferences, and you ask him a straight question, he'll give you a straight answer, and he keeps you on your toes, certainly, with how you word your questions. You know, if you say, some people are saying, Mick, that such and such, you know, he'll soon jump on that and say, come on, ask the question properly. And with a few colourful words thrown in as well, of course. And so, yeah, he's a challenge to work with, but in a good way. And even the put down begin with a little smile sometimes as well. So, yeah, no, he's good fun.
Good stuff. Stuart, great to talk to you. Thanks very much for coming on.
Cheers, guys.
We appreciate it. That is Stuart Watson, Ipswich reporter for the East Anglian Daily Times and Evening Star. Next, we're off to the madhouse to talk about that man again, Massimo Cellino.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
So So on the field, a fantastic 2-0 win for Leeds United against Championship leaders Derby County at Elland Road on Saturday, and much needed as well, only their second win in the last 11 games. But it was followed on Monday afternoon by more headlines about the club's owner, Massimo Cellino, a man we talked about a lot on this show. The Football League announced that Cellino has been disqualified and asked to resign from the club as a result of new documents obtained from an Italian court which had found him guilty of tax evasion. They now show him to be in breach of the league's fit and proper ownership test, which of course he originally failed early this year before getting that decision overturned on appeal. So it's a bit of a messy situation because in March next year his conviction will be deemed spent and he'll be able to resume control. So is he effectively being asked to step aside for 4 months? Let's speak to a solicitor and sports lawyer who can hopefully help us make sense of all this. Daniel G edits the football law publication On the Ball, and he's provided comment and analysis for the likes of Sky Sports News, BBC and CNN in the past, and he's on the line right now. Daniel, firstly, thank you very much for coming on the show. Let's start with what the Football League have said today. Just explain how long Cellino has to get out, first of all, and what you think the process is going to be from this point onwards.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, by the way, as well. It's quite an unprecedented territory that the Football League is effectively in now. What they have done by issuing a press release and linking to their decision is effectively validating their original disqualification decision back towards the beginning of this year, where they said that because Cellino had effectively been found guilty of tax evasion for a yacht he didn't pay tax on back in Italy, he was effectively disqualified from owning Leeds by way of the owners and directors test. One of the effective qualifying criteria is that there is not an act of dishonesty that effectively prevails in a type of criminal civil case against an individual. And in this case, the way things unraveled really was that he was initially disqualified by the Football League board. He appealed that decision and was successful on the appeal simply because at the time when the appeal happened, the actual Italian court decision wasn't available to the one-man QC who was reviewing the appeal on behalf of Leeds and the Football League, effectively saying that he couldn't tell whether the actual tax evasion offence was a dishonest offence. And until he was able to understand whether the offence was dishonest, i.e. until the actual publication of the Italian court decision, Cellino wasn't acting in a disqualified manner because the owners and directors test couldn't be found conditional. So in the end, we've had a hiatus for a number of months while the Football League has awaited the Italian court decision, which apparently was not forthcoming by Leeds. They had to actually apply to the Italian court. And as a result now, after translating the court decision, the Football League board has undertaken with legal advice their new view that for a second time, Cellino is effectively disqualified as an owner under the owners and directors test because it's deemed that he has failed it because of the dishonest intent. So we're almost back to square one in a sense. It's taken a number of months to get to where we are, but it now appears, at least anyway, that Cellino will appeal this second disqualification decision. I think because what the judgment says within the next month or so, we'll know either way what the future holds for Leeds. So I hope that wasn't too long a winded explanation of the last few months.
We're going round in circles, aren't we?
It's a tricky one
with this whole situation, DC.
Yeah. It's a tricky one for the Football League because the so-called fit and proper persons test is something that's come under the spotlight a lot of times in the past. The league have been criticised a lot for allowing owners to run football clubs that have, in the end, have been, you know, disasters. Birmingham City, for example, you know, the whole Blackburn situation, etc. There's plenty of examples. So they want to be seen to be making the right calls, and we all want that fit and proper persons test to be carried out as stringently as possible, and the right people own these, you know, own the football clubs, because ultimately they're proud community institutions that need to be looked after. But Leeds are, you know, are Leeds defence, the people who work at Leeds and have been working with Chiellino, despite some of his madcap ways, they will say, well, hang on, he's actually doing some good for the club. You know, he's a bit of an eccentric guy. But if you compare him to some of the people that have owned the club in the past, he's actually, you know, he's taking us forward. And if the league keep getting challenged on this and keep letting him back in, they look weak. And it's a mess all round.
And March as well, this is the, Daniel, this is the next thing. The conviction's going to be spent in March, so he could come back then anyway, as I understand.
Exactly. And I think the troubling issue really in some ways is that on one side, the Football League need to show that they mean business, and rightly so. They have the owners and directors test there, which used to be the fit and proper test, available and to be enforceable should situations like this arise. And on the other side, you have the insistence that under the Rehabilitation of Offenders Act, after a year or determinative of the length of time of the potential conviction, that it becomes a spent conviction, i.e. you can't be liable for your actions forever, effectively, in a lot of different ways, and owning a football club is one of them. So you get this quite peculiar situation now where he's disqualified for a second time. He may still appeal that, and that appeal will end in around a month's time, where the final conclusive decision will occur. And it may only be then that there are three month vacuum, really, if the appeal is unsuccessful, that Mr. Chiellino cannot own, control, be a director of the football club. And that very short period of time may well pass quickly or otherwise, and may then lead to a situation where he can then re-own or continue to own the club. What is very difficult to understand is how he is going to effectively divest himself. It's relatively easy. It's easier to do to simply resign as a director of the club. It's a lot less easy to sell your shares and then rebuy them back a few months later, and or exert any type of influence or control over the club in the interim. That is going to be the very tricky sort of tightrope that the Football League is going to have to regulate to ensure that during that period, if he is unsuccessful in the appeal, that there isn't going to be that grey area where Chiellino may still be involved in these in any capacity. And
well, that's what I was going to ask you about, because if this appeal is unsuccessful, is there any way that he can sort of stay in charge from the background, or is that sort of completely out, you know, that cannot happen?
Well, by way of somewhat uncharted territory to a degree, unless the Football League is going to hire investigators to ensure that Mr. Chiellino is not acting in any capacity within the football club, there are provisions in the owners and directors test which prohibit connected parties from him, so there isn't an indirect way of influence, and there's such provisions to the shadow directorships as well, where he is just putting a puppet in effectively to control the day-to-day runnings, but it is actually him that's in the background running things. I think it's going to be very difficult evidentially to the Football League to try and ensure that their regulations are being upheld. But they have a very difficult situation, that it's not like he's going to be disqualified for the next 5 years, and it would seem appropriate that he'd probably need to sell then as a result, because the ban would be so long. This disqualification is for such a short period of time potentially that the club and himself are left in a type of limbo.
He said he's going to buy tickets to watch the games if he has to. I mean, could the league stop him from even doing that? I mean, and ultimately, you know, what is there, like, worst case scenario if he refuses to sell the club or whatever? Can they actually legally make him do that?
Well, under the owners and directors test, if he is disqualified, he is not able to own, control, be a director, have direct or indirect influence over the club at all. Now, if he is simply going to the club to watch on the stands as a normal spectator, I would see that I can't see how he would fit into the realms of influencing or controlling players or the administration by simply turning up on the terraces. But the nuclear option, really, as I was explaining a bit earlier this afternoon, was that if, for example, he decides not to relinquish control or influence or directorship of Leeds, there is a provision in the regulations in Schedule 3 of the ODT, which effectively says the Football League, in extreme circumstances, can actually withdraw membership to a club that continues to be in breach. So that is the nuclear option. I'm not suggesting for one second it will be taken lightly or will in effect happen, but there is that power that the Football League has, should Leeds and the individuals concerned not comply comply with the disqualification decision.
You know what Chiellino's like? He'd just turn up on the bench, wouldn't he? That's the kind of owner he is.
I was just going to ask, I mean, looking at it from your informed point of view, how do you think the Football League come out of this? Because ultimately, I mean, you've got a situation here where a man who's failed, so we failed their test twice, but is still owning a football club in the Championship.
One of the biggest, I mean, in the Championship.
Do you think, have the league done everything they can and acted in the best way, or do they deserve criticism really for how they've handled it, or is it, you know, they've done everything they can really?
Well, the difficult situation was that at the time of the Leeds takeover by Mr. Chiellino originally, and I can't remember the exact timing of things, but at least when Chiellino bought Leeds United, the decision as to the tax evasion case, the actual full written judgment was certainly not available. So when effectively the Football League came out with its initial announcement that he had been involved in a disqualifying event, i.e. the tax evasion, and he then appealed, there wasn't really much the Football League could do apart from wait for the effectively the independent appeals board to come to their decision. And Mr. Kerr QC's decision was effectively that until everybody knows what the actual written reasons of the judgment are, no one can know whether there's been dishonest intent, and that's the basis for the qualifying criteria for the owners and directors test. So the Football League were caught in a limbo situation where they couldn't prove that there was a disqualifying event until they could actually prove from the written judgment that there was dishonesty within a set out in the judgment. And that and the disclosure of that judgment, of the drafting of it, took a number of months and has only really come to light in the last few weeks, where then the translation of the judgment happened and they've come to their new but seemingly original decision. So, you know, the Football League are in a very difficult position. I think they've tried hard to try and get this judgment as soon as possible. It failed for a number of reasons. And interestingly, part of the Football League decision now states that they're actually going to start initiating regulatory proceedings against Leeds for the non-disclosure of the judgment. By reading between the lines, it appears that Leeds weren't too forthcoming in providing the judgment to the Football League, and the Football League actually had to go directly to the Italian authorities to ask for disclosure of it. So there's almost a separate new disciplinary track taking place at the same time as this disqualifying appeal as well.
Well, the Leeds fans are not massive fans of the Football League anyway, so that's not going to sort of improve relations. We should say, I think Sean Harvey sort of abstained, didn't he? Or he was removed from this vote because of his previous connections with Leeds as well. We should make that clear. Daniel, thanks very much for coming on and explaining all that to us. Great to talk to you. That is solicitor and sports lawyer Daniel G, who edits the football law publication On the Ball. And for the final score on football law, you can visit Dan's website, danielg.com, plus he's at Football Law on Twitter. Next on We Are Going Up, we're off to Wadden Road.
The We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
So to Cheltenham Town then, who last week sacked manager Mark Yates after almost 5 years in charge. That following a run of four successive League Two defeats that left them down in 18th place. They appointed his successor just a couple of days later, Paul Buckle. And Paul Buckle was in charge for his first game on Saturday, the 1-1 draw at home to Oxford. Earlier on, DC and I spoke to Mark Halliwell, who is the author of the blog Cheltenham Town Chatter, and he's the Cheltenham co-commentator on BBC Radio Gloucestershire as well. Well, and I started by asking Mark to give us his reaction to the events of the last week.
Well, first of all, I think it's fair. We must say that it wasn't a complete surprise that Mark Yates left the club. I mean, because since the playoff final, I mean, he got to the playoff final 2011-12, then the playoff semi-final the following season, and then last season was a very big disappointment for everybody, because those two playoff seasons would really heighten the expectation around the club, and everybody thought that from then, you know, they could push on and maybe go one better, and it just didn't, for some reason, whatever reason it was, it just didn't happen last season at all. So there were a lot of supporters who actually thought that Mark should have gone in the summer, and that he shouldn't have even been given a, because his contract ran out at the end of last summer, and there was talk during last season that he was going to get a new 2-year contract, and that turned into a new 1-year contract. And then his assistant manager, Neil Howarth, left the club, and Sean North was brought in to coach alongside him. So he was sort of a little bit in the last chance saloon anyway, coming into this season. He started the season well, but then 9 points from the last 36 of his reign. It was only 2 wins out of the last 13 games in all. And as you said, 4 defeats straight away as well. And the last two, 5-1 against Stevenage and 4-1 against Wickham. So not really a surprise he was gone. As for Paul Buckle, well, he's done okay at this level. I mean, he's done okay at Torquay. He did a decent job there. He got them out of the conference. He got them into the playoff final. And from what I've spoken to, I've got some friends who work down there and live down there, and they say that he did a decent job for them. Bristol Rovers didn't go so well for him there. I understand that the Cheltenham chairman spoke to the chairman of Bristol Rovers about Paul Buckle simply because of the concerns about the job that they were worried maybe what sort of job he'd done there and what sort of thing had happened. And he was told apparently that he was doing okay because they wanted him to make changes and he was making those changes, but apparently he rather alienated the supporters. And that was more the reason for him leaving Bristol Rovers than anything else. Then he went on to Luton, did okay there. Had about a 50% win record, I think, when he was at Luton, but that's a tough job because getting them out of the conference is a tough ask. And then he went off to America. So 300 odd games at this level, he's got good experience. I know that our board have always been impressed with him in the past, at Torquay especially. So all in all, not a great surprise. But the surprise to many, to me, in fact, was the haste in which it was done. It was done ever so quickly. I mean, Mark left the club. I think the decision was taken on Monday night that Mark was going to leave the club. It was announced on Tuesday morning. And then by Wednesday afternoon, Paul Buckle was in the job. So real haste. I think the fact was that the what the club didn't want, they didn't want that hiatus. They didn't want that sort of, you know, caretaker time, if you know what I mean, that you get at other clubs where it takes a week to 10 days to get a new manager in.
Mark, we've seen Paul Buckle's first game in charge. He's done the press conferences and the interviews before the game, after his appointment. What sort of first impression has he made in terms of the performance of the team and also just his general mannerisms and his outlook?
As far as the performance of the team goes, I mean, they looked what they are, really, which is a team with not much confidence at the moment. The first half especially, they were quite... there was a lot of nerves about, you could tell, on the pitch there. And, you know, they wanted to impress, but it was almost as if in some ways they were almost trying too hard to impress. And it was a bit of a struggle. To be honest with you, Oxford should have won the game. And the only reason Oxford didn't win the game was because Trevor Carson in goal had a fantastic game and made one fantastic save from Callum O'Dowd to win, which looked as if it was going in, and he managed to tip it over and round the post. As for Paul Buckle himself, people I've spoken to within the club, I've spoken to a couple of the players, and you know, they've been impressed with him. He had apparently had one-to-one meetings with them all on Wednesday, and, you know, sort of try and get to know them a bit better and find that he asked them all what they thought their best position was. I know some of them is fairly obvious. I mean, he's not going to play Trevor Carson up front or anything like that, but I think he just wanted to get a little bit out of them and find a little bit about them. So from what I'm told, I've had a couple in a couple of other people within the club, they've all said, you know, it's been positive so far. His interview after the game, he said he was, you know, pleased with the resilience the team put in, and that's true. The effort was there, but he'll be under no illusions now, having seen Saturday, about the task that he's got in front. I mean, if we'd gone out and won 3-0 on Saturday, it might have papered over the cracks a little bit. The fact that he went there and it wasn't great, and, you know, we didn't put in a fantastic performance, he will know now that there are areas of the team that he needs to look at.
Do you know how it's going to work in terms of, you know, is he completely moving back to the UK now? Because he was living in America because his wife, Rebecca Lowe, works for NBC out there. Has that been explained? Is he going to, you know,
no.
Is he? I'm kind of just slightly confused by that situation.
Yeah, that's something that we haven't managed to quite get to the bottom of yet. And not, you know, how often he's going to be jetting back and forth to New York, or whether he's going to be relying on Skype to... keep in touch with Mrs. Buckle stroke Low, or whatever we have to call her. But no, that one hasn't quite been explained. I mean, he's apparently off watching a match tonight. Tomorrow he's going to go and watch Dover, who are FA Cup opponents on Sunday. They're playing against Torquay, ironically enough, one of his old teams. So it does seem that he's throwing himself heart and soul into the job. And apparently, I mean, from the interviews, he said to his wife, apparently, you know, I need to go and do this. I need to go and be a manager again. I want to go and be a manager again. And she said, okay, you go and do it, fine, no problem at all. So, you know, it does seem to be that, you know, he's thought about this quite a lot, because he apparently, the fact how our board first came aware of the fact that he was possibly in the running and looking out for a managed job was that he very nearly got the job at Burton Albion, apparently.
Ah, well, he was working for an academy, wasn't he, out in New York, like a football academy. So he's obviously
something like that.
He's obviously decided that he wants to get back into management, and this is the opportunity. You mentioned the Dover game on Sunday. It's a bit of an anomaly in Cheltenham's season so far. The FA Cup win over Swindon, 5-0 victory against a team second in League One at the minute, and this is obviously a key game, because if you can get into that third round, you could get the glamour tie away from home at the start of January.
But Dover are in good form, so it could be a tricky one, couldn't it?
Dover are, yes. They've gone 9 without defeat, apparently, after they win at Gateshead on Saturday. But it is, there's no understating how important this game is for the club. Absolutely no understating it at all. Financially, it is huge, really, because if we can get through it and, as you say, get into the next round, not only does it help the club financially with maybe cutting down on the loss that they'll make at the end of the year, because they will make a loss, but also going forward for Paul himself into January, it will sort of define really how much money he'll have to be able to make the changes he wants to make to the squad. And so it is a massive game, but it won't be easy in any way, shape or form, because we know that Dover are going to come. They're going to play probably 5 at the back. They're going to be strong. They're a big, tough, physical team. And as you said, they're on a decent run, especially, I mean, that win at Gateshead was decent. Not many teams got there and win.
As you mentioned earlier, Cheltenham are a team that in the recent past have been up in the playoffs, going back a little bit further than that. Mark Yates himself captained them to promotion from this division.
Yes, he did.
And, you know, so what's it, is the ambition, you know, this season to be pushing up towards the playoffs, or is it kind of Paul Buckle, do you think, will just set mid-table kind of, and, you know, going forward next season will be the time to really go for it? I mean, is the ambition as a club for Cheltenham to be a League One team and to push on, or do you think kind of League Two is their sort of level?
I think as far as budget and crowds go, I would say League Two is about their level, but there's always the ambition there. The chairman always, Paul Baker, he always says when he's asked the question, you know, where do you see Cheltenham in 3 years' time? Where do you see Cheltenham in 5 years' time? His answer is always consolidating ourselves in League One. So the ambition from the club as a whole is there, but it's just whether it is achievable on the budget that Cheltenham have got and on the crowds that they're getting, because that is the sort of downside of it. I mean, Cheltenham can't shop at Harrods quite a lot of the time, where like some League Two clubs can. Often they're sort of snapping around and looking for bargains, looking for young players to try and bring on, looking for the odd decent loan signing here and there. I mean, we've had some decent loan signings in the past. I mean, we had Jack Butland in goal, for goodness sake. I mean, that was one of the best loan signings that we've ever had. We had Luke Garbutt, who just made his debut for Everton in the Europa League a few days ago, England under 21. So Mark Yates was quite good at that in some ways, but then in other ways he did over rely maybe on the youth setup and the loan setup. And that's something that I would like to see Paul Buckle try and shy away from if he can, because we've got some decent young players. I wouldn't mind seeing a few of them given a run out. But as I say, the ambition is still there. The ambition is still there at board level, I think, to get the club into League One. And it's still quite tight. If Cheltenham can go on a decent run, if he can turn the form around, if Cheltenham go on a run, like we saw York last season, they were 22nd at Christmas and ended up in the playoffs. So never say never, I think, is the phrase.
And Mark, just one last question. On Mark Yates himself, I mean, there must have been a real sadness around the club, despite, as you said at the start, accepting that it was probably the right decision to make. This is a guy who was in charge for almost 5 years, one of the longest serving managers in the league, a hero as a player, played 230 games for the club between 1999 and 2004. I'm sure, how will the fans look back at his tenure as a manager?
Oh, I think overall with you know, they'll be pleased with the job he did. I mean, he came in, I mean, as you say, you're quite right about him as a player. He's a fantastic player for us. You know, ran through brick walls, central midfield, you know, hard as nails, really put a shift in every single time he pulled the shirt on. And as a player, a big favourite. And then as a manager, He came in at a tough time. Martin Allen, it was all complete. Well, that was a complete disaster for the club, really, the Martin Allen era. And we were in danger of going out of the Football League. He stabilised the club to start with, which was, I mean, that squad that he inherited was very, very poor indeed. He stabilised the squad at the end of the 2009-10 season when he took over. Then, again, had to stabilise it. And then nearly achieved what we really wanted him to do, 2011-12. But to be absolutely honest, that season we should have gone on automatically because we were playing some fantastic stuff between about the end of September and the sort of the middle of January. We were playing great stuff, and then it just all dropped off a bit towards the end. And I'm afraid, as a manager, he'll go down as a nearly man, the man who nearly took Cheltenham up. Whereas, you know, you go back to Steve Cotterill, absolute legend at Cheltenham, took them up. John Ward took them up. But Mark, I'm afraid he will go down as a bit of a nearly man, with some good memories, though, from, you know, playing Tottenham away in the Cup, playing Everton at home in the Cup, playing, you know, and getting to Wembley and the playoff final. So some good memories, but a bit of a nearly man overall.
That was Mark Halliwell, author of the blog Cheltenham Town Chatter and also co-commentator on BBC Radio Gloucestershire, talking to myself and DC a little earlier on. And it's time to kind of just have a look at what's been going on the last couple of weeks in the Football League. We'll start in League Two, actually, considering we just touched on Cheltenham. They're not the only club to have changed manager, because Paul Cox has left Mansfield by mutual consent after 3.5 years in charge. His departure came 2 days after they were held 1-1 by Concord Rangers from non-league in the FA Cup, a team I've never heard of in my life. He led them to promotion back to the Football League in 2013. After a 5-year absence, they were 11th in League Two last season, and a 33-year-old Adam Murray player is in caretaker charge. It's funny, isn't it, when these teams come up from the Conference, like, it can only take 1 or 2 years and suddenly the bar has been raised. And if you don't quite meet that standard, so much for sentiment, out you go.
Absolutely, because I think every club in League Two, especially the ones that are newly promoted, know how difficult it is to get out of the Conference. You know, you see teams go down and don't come up for a long time. So all of a sudden, that extra level of pressure is there. And you know, unfortunately for Paul Cox, that's what's done for him.
We'll have to wait and see who takes that job over the next few weeks. Top of the tree in League Two, Wickham, 4-1 win at Hartlepool at the weekend. Amazing, really. They're top after 19 games, bearing in mind what happened to them last season. Hartlepool, this situation looks grim. Jeff Stelling gets increasingly more depressed because they're 6 points off safety. And, well, they're looking big trouble. They've got a big game on Friday, though, against Blyth Spartans. So they win that live on BBC Two in the FA Cup. That can maybe inject a bit of life back into their season. At the other end, obviously Tranmere, big win for them against Pompey as well, down the bottom. At the other end, at the top, it is Luton, Shrewsbury and Southend, who were hot on the heels of Wickham. We lost 2-0 at home to Dagenham at the weekend. We never bloody beat Dagenham, ever. I've had two home games against Newport and Dagenham 2 weeks running. Two games we needed to get 6 points out.
That imperious home record. What's happened?
It's all fallen apart. Well, you know, the away form was bad and we needed, you know, two winnable home games. It's all gone wrong at home. Too much tinkering, I think, you know, changing.
Another new goalkeeper at the weekend, was it?
It was back to the old one, yeah. Scott Loach has gone back to Rotherham. Yeah. And ironically, they had a massive goalkeeping error at the weekend as well. Too much tinkering, I think, and I don't know, we're really struggling at the minute. I still think if we can get back to how we were before the 5-0 defeat at Shrewsbury, then I still think we'll come good. But yeah, we need a win. We've got a big game against Luton in the FA Cup at the weekend, and obviously they're flying, so that's going to be difficult. And we should mention a couple of goals as well. Kwesi Appiah, the Cambridge against AFC Wimbledon, actually that one in particular, because that was an absolutely beautiful chip. And a nod to Exeter as well. I know we can't mention all the teams, but 8 wins in 12 for them. They've really turned things around at the minute and they're doing really well. So well done to Paul Tisdale, everyone there. Into League One, 3-0 win for Bristol City at Peterborough on Friday night. Very, very impressive, Luke
Indeed.
Freeman. A couple of beautiful goals. Good response to back-to-back defeats. Swindon, 4 straight wins there in second. They beat Fleetwood 1-0 and Preston have bounced back as well. Back-to-back wins after their losses a couple of weeks ago. They're 1 point behind in third.
Well, it's really tightened up at the top, hasn't it? Yeah. Obviously, with Swindon and Preston both beating Bristol City in the last couple of weeks. What once was a healthy lead starting to grow for Bristol City is now down to 2 points. And as I'm sure you were about to mention, have a look at MK Dons.
I was about to say, check out their games in hand as well. Yeah. 2 games in hand, and they beat Colchester 6-0, the top scorers in League One, best goal difference. And that man Dele Alli scored again, didn't he? An absolute beauty.
Actually, for Benik Afobe as well.
Looking good. Maybe this is the final of the year.
Well, it's going well for them, and as you say, they've got those games in hand, and they're right behind them in terms of the points. So they got the momentum's with them. They need to take advantage.
You are going to have a drink with Carl Robinson at the Football League Awards again this year. You knew
I was
going to
come back. I'm not sure I will this.
Down the bottom, 7 defeats in 10 for Yeovil. They're in the bottom four with Crewe, Colchester, and Scunthorpe, who picked up a good win at the weekend, 2-1 at Barnsley. Leighton Orient, they're having a nightmare this season, aren't they? So close to promotion, that penalty shootout at Wembley, just above the drop zone, and only 1 win in the last 10 games for Gillingham. So the pressure is mounting on Peter Taylor there as well. In the Championship, well, we're going to start with Malky Mackay, haven't we? He's in at Wigan, I think a draw and a defeat in his first 2 games. Dave Whelan's been charged by the FA. He's got until Friday to respond to the charge. His statements were abusive and or insulting and or constituting proper conduct and bring the game into disrepute. These were statements about Chinese people and kind of all various things, wasn't he? He may have offered back to David Conn, Jewish people as well. Didn't really reflect very well on the club, that whole situation. Well, it's a shame because Wigan are one of those clubs that everyone likes to like, basically.
Well, no one comes out of it with any credit. The whole situation has been managed appallingly. You know, you should never, regardless of just looking at it from a purely sort of from the process point of view, whether you think Malky Mackay should be given another chance or not, Wigan shouldn't have employed him while he was still being investigated, because it leaves themselves open to this situation. I mean, the FA as well, why is it taking them so long to deal with this situation? They've not helped the situation with the slowness and the lethargy that they seem to have taken in terms of investigating this situation. Now they've got another investigation on their hands with Whelan. They shouldn't have appointed Malky Mackay, because it just allows this culture that is clearly rife within the game. And this is an example that's come out, but we've seen examples in the past, you know, the Keys and Gray saga, and there's been plenty of examples of this sort of homophobic, misogynistic, sort of discriminatory culture that does exist in the game. It's been in there for decades, and that's the real problem. It's the culture. It's not necessarily the individuals. I don't think that these people are really horrible. I don't think they're really vicious, evil racists or whatever, you know, sexists and homophobe people. I just think they don't know any better. They should know better, because they're grown men and they live in the 21st century, and it's not acceptable. But it's all they've ever known, and nothing is done to educate or to try and, you know, not enough is done. There are organisations that try and do some very good work to change the situation, but it's very difficult to change the culture, and I don't think it has been changed. And until the culture is changed, you'll go on having this situation. And, you know, for Wigan to appoint a manager, it just sends the complete wrong message to anyone in the whole game that you can do these things and it's fine. But then on the flip side, to play devil's advocate, you know, Malky Mackay may well say, well, these are private communications, and that's the difficulty the FA have got as well. Can they do someone for sending private messages, even if they were on a work phone?
Well, it's the same way that the Keys and Gray conversations at the Wolves Liverpool game were off air, weren't they? And
once the cat's out of the bag, you know, you've got to do something.
Will he resign, do you think, Whelan? He said he would if they.
Well, he'll have to if he wants to stick by his words, but
he won't.
Given the character of the man and, you know, all the outbursts he's come out with in the past, you wouldn't be surprised if he did a U-turn.
No. Speaking of despicable acts, do you see that dive in the Leeds Derby game at the weekend?
Oh, ridiculous. I posted this thing on Twitter today. That's exactly what I do when you're going to the toilet at night or something, or getting up in the morning and you're a bit sluggish and you just stub your toe on the corner of the door, down like that, straight away, rolling around. It was absolutely incredible. After you think he's stopped rolling after the initial two or three rolls, he sort of jumps up like a salmon. Yeah. Like, it does, it almost does like the worm.
It's ridiculous. If you haven't seen it, we've retweeted it. Wagyu Podcast on Twitter. Adrian, the Leeds player. Great win for Leeds, though. 2-0 against Derby. Bad day for them. Up at the top, Bournemouth threw away 2 points against Millwall. Brentford keep going, though. Their best run in the second tier since 1938. They won 5 games in a row. They beat Wolves 4-0 at Griffin Park, and they're up to third. 4 straight defeats for Wolves. Brentford flying. Who else? Middlesbrough. They drew 1-0 with Blackburn. One of the saves of the season in that game from Simon Eastwood from Vossen. Unbelievable save.
I mean, Karanka was furious at the end of the game. I mean, he got sent off.
Quite rightly. And he ridiculous quite rightly decision so, yeah. by Clattenburg.
But Middlesbrough had enough chance that they should have won that game.
But it was a foul, wasn't it, on the keeper?
Definitely two fouls. There was a foul on the defender at the back post, and the keeper was fouled as well, quite clearly. And so yeah, he was rightly annoyed.
New manager,
they were second as well until that.
They were, yeah. New manager news. 5 wins in 8 for Russell Slade at Cardiff.
Don't I know it?
Another win for Neil Lennon at Bolton, 1-0 against Huddersfield, and 3 wins and 2 draws for Gary Rowett in his first 5 games. That home record, they won 2 home games out of 26. He's won 2 out of 2. So maybe Lee Clark was part of the problem, as Birmingham fans were saying. After all, Nigel Adkins has joined Twitter.
I saw that. You showed me that last night.
Brilliant. Fantastic. He's quote something. Is that him? No.
Yes.
Quote along the lines of, you know, I'm a forward-thinking manager, and everyone's on Twitter, so I wanted to see what it's about. And he posted a tweet on Sunday morning of him on his laptop.
He's a forward-thinking manager, but he's one of the most boring managers in terms of his post-match interviews. Not necessarily in his delivery, but the content of what he says. He gives you absolutely nothing. All he does is just basically verbal match reports at the end of every game. He's a master at it. He's never drawn on any questions by journalists after games, so we'll see whether he has actually anything interesting to say on Twitter.
That was my phone, by the way, not yours. I've just realised, sorry. Booze at the final whistle at Carrow Road for Norwich, who are plummeting down the table fast. They brought in Mike Phelan, Fergie's ex.
Two identical goals that they conceded to Reading as well, pretty much, wasn't it?
Mike Phelan, the ex-defending Norwich player, has come in and is the assistant manager to Neil Adams. So they are, I'm just looking at the table, they're down in 11th at the minute. And we should mention Adam Federici, the Reading goalkeeper, great tribute to the Australian cricketer Phil Hughes when he put out his bat before the game there. Right, okie dokie, this is all you've been waiting for. You wanted us to fly through that because it's competition time to give away. Firstly, what have we got and thanks to whom?
Well, thanks to the good people at Sports Interactive, the creators of the Football Manager series. We've got 3 copies of Football Manager 2015 to give away.
Okay, so if you want to enter, listen up. This is how you do it. You go to wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. That's wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. You fill in the form there. Just stick Football Manager competition in the subject line, and in the box below, send us your answer. If you get it right, you'll go into a random draw to win 1 of 3 copies of Football Manager 2015 just in time for Christmas. We'll do the draw on the next show. I'm up north next week, so it'll probably be in 2 weeks. So you've got 2 weeks to enter. That address you need to go to again, wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. Just fill in the form there, put Football Manager competition in the subject line and answer the following question. David Cameron Walker.
Of the 24 managers of teams in the Championship, how many have also played for the teams that they currently manage?
One more time, that question again.
So basically, how many managers in the Championship have played for the teams that they're currently in charge of?
There you go. So let us know the number and the names. Do we want both?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, okay, we do.
Otherwise, you're just guessing. Yeah, okay. I suppose you could guess. I want to know.
We want the numbers and the names, please. wearegoingup.co.uk/contact. Fill in the form
Mate,
there.
You work hard for your...
Yes, and you'll be in the draw if you get it right to win Football Manager 2015 in 2 weeks' time. In other free stuff news, remember to hit up audible.co.uk/goingup right now and you can take advantage of a very special free 1 month trial offer that allows you to download an audiobook of your choice for free. Go there, click Get My Free Audiobook, and then the audiobook will be yours to keep whether or not you decide to cancel before the 30 days are up. Simple as that. So if you listen to us plug this and you've never actually done it, why not do it? audible.co.uk/goingup. And a reminder as well, thanks to the good people at Paddy Power, we can offer you a brilliant sort of special money back offer, because if you go to wearegoingup.co.uk/Paddy Power and set up a new account, bet a fiver, you get a £20 free bet. But it's really important you do sign up at that particular URL. wearegoingup.co.uk/Paddy Power. So follow the link from there. Do you have much joy at the weekend betting wise?
No. I did a different bet this week. I followed some of the Football League tips from Mark O'Hare.
All right.
And
friend of the show.
Well, one of them came. He had 3 tips and there were 3 games where it was over 2.5 and both teams to score.
Yeah.
And I trebled them up, so I did all right. 3 as a treble and didn't come in. But one of the 3 did come in. So I suppose if you're doing it single, his tip would have worked. But I was trying to get a bit more money, and obviously,
no,
as ever, failed.
Per usual. Maybe you'll have more joy if you go to that URL. wearegoingup.co.uk/Paddy Power. Right. So we're busy working on this special thing for Christmas. We'll be back with another show. I think it's going to be the week after next, unless something massive happens in the next week. Who have you got the weekend? I think it's FA Cup second round. So we've got Luton.
Well, we've got Fulham on Friday night away at Craven Cottage.
Will you be there?
We'll be there, yes.
Excellent.
We need a win, no doubt about it.
Let's see if you are as cold as the last time you were there when we went to the Blackpool game a few weeks ago. That's it. The website is wearegoingup.co.uk. If you want to get in touch, you can get in touch through there. And the Twitter is at Wagyu Podcast. Enjoy your advent calendars. We'll speak to you next time on We Are Going Up.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.